Hello and welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barber. I'm co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, and mentor. Today on the show, we are talking to Jermaine Hurley. He began investing in 2008 by purchasing a six-unit building and joined Jake and Gino in 2021. Since beginning, he and his partner have purchased, renovated, leased, and refinanced 127 units with a portfolio of 30 buildings made up of 2 to 7 units. Last year, he was able to refinance and pull out 1.8 million baby money soldiers out of equity with a $1 million line of credit. Welcome to the show, Jermaine Hurley.
Hey, Gino. Pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me on. Looking forward to it.
Bro, let's talk. I just was, as I'm reading the bio, you start in 2008. You're not a smart guy like Gino, are you? You started probably the worst time you possibly can start in real estate. And to everybody out there, there is never the right time. The only time that it's right is when you are ready. And the market doesn't dictate anything. You can buy real estate in any market cycle. You can't sell real estate in every market cycle, but you can buy. Why 2008? What was the reason why you got into real estate in 2008?
So I graduated college. I played sports in high school, college, and it was pretty much exercise science. I went into physical therapy. Unfortunately, people weren't as motivated as I was to do certain things. So I wasn't used to that. So I kind of lost the passion for it. And I happened to read a book like a lot of other people. It was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Just was at the store one day. I saw it, read it, you know, the whole thing in like a day or two, and a light bulb went off, and it was just like, wow, this is great. I can bring some of the passion I had in sports, and, you know, I mean, I can grow, improve, and that, and it just, real estate just seemed, I could see it every day. I saw the property my parents lived in, and I just saw multifamilies all around me, and it just made sense, and that's what I wanted to focus on.
Take me back to that 2008 when you're doing the physical therapy, because this story resonates so much with me, because Jake complained about the same thing. He wanted to be a personal trainer, and he's like, Gino, I'm telling these people to do their push-ups. No one's working out. I'm the only one, so I'm following my passion here, and I'm not making money. I mean, real estate did not sound like a passion to you. How did you fall into it? I mean, I know you read the book, but how did you get the nerve? How did you get the guts in 2008 when the sky is falling to say, hey, I'm going out and buying a deal?
I've always been driven to try things and to push goals. My parents instilled in me, I never really came from money. We're blue collar, worked for everything we had. We had our struggles. Money was very important. So I always knew I needed to do something to provide for my family. I had no safety net, so I had to do something. And it just seemed like it made sense. It just in my head, it was like, all right, you buy this building, people rent it from you. They pay you rent every month. They pay down your mortgage. It helps with your taxes. Why not do it? It seemed pretty simple. Obviously, 2008 wasn't the best time probably to get into real estate. I pretty much got my license. And then like after that, everything just fell apart. You know, I mean, deals that were, I would say my best deal was the one I didn't do. I almost bought it for like $330. It was a 4-unit renovated. I didn't end up going through with that transaction. It ended up a year later was worth like $120 at auction sale. So,
wow.
Yeah. So,
wow. Let me ask you a question. What is that deal worth today, you think?
That deal probably, it's probably, and for you, it's probably worth about $600,000-$700,000.
So there it is. Buy right, sit tight. Buy right, manage right, finance right. At that point, that deal probably was not financed properly because I was probably cash flowing, right? But the problem is when you have short-term fixed rate financing like bridge debt, like we're seeing today, if you can hold on during the tough times, like I just said, you can't, and you made this point for me, you can't always sell real estate. You can't refi that deal. I went through that same struggle in 2012 and 2013, but you said something very interesting to me before we hit that record button. You said in 2014, I'm doing some of these fixes and flips. And I wish I had held on to a couple of those because my net worth would have gotten a lot bigger. Talk about the mindset shift that you've had over the last few years, because fixing and flipping is great. You want transactional money. You want to get that equity from those fixes and flips to live the lifestyle that you need to pay your bills, but then also to put into your other investments, other multifamily. Talk about that period of your life.
So young, pretty much in 2014, I was about 30 years old at that point, had a lot of student debt. And at first, the multifamilies weren't making as much money. They were making some money, and we kept doing kind of refinance, but we kept building. So I didn't take a lot of the money out for me and my business partner. Again, we would buy a property, board it up, we'd renovate it, rent it out, refinance, take that money, and put it into another building. So at that time, sometimes when you're moving along brick by brick, you kind of want, you're like, I'm doing all this hard work. When is it going to pay off? And I was kind of looking at something fast, you know what I mean? Something shiny. And I was like, oh, this fix and flip. Let me do this. It seems easy. I fix it up. I can get this money right away in a few months. It sounds great. What can go wrong? So we did a few deals. Yeah, fix and flip. Anything that can go wrong went wrong. And it was a different market. It wasn't like it is today where you list something and you have 20 buyers that came in. It's you list it, you get one or two buyers, and chances back then, if they pass on your property, they're probably going to find a better deal. While now you're probably not going to be in that position, but it was then. So we had to hold on to the property. Some of them we had to rent out. Long story short, I probably would have been able to buy 10 more buildings, at least maybe even more, and probably would have had 50 more units. And probably just that alone, probably would have had a million or two more net worth. So looking back now, I'm like, wow, you know, any chance I have, I buy more multis that where I can hold on to, because I can buy it, I can fix it up, rent it out, and then I can refinance that money out. I don't have to pay taxes on that money. When I do a fix and flip, half of that money at least is going right back into taxes that I don't have. So that was a big thing, a real light bulb that went off.
Let me know and describe to the listeners the feeling that you felt when you refied out $1 million. What was that feeling like?
It was you kind of knew, like, I was like, okay, these properties may be worth something, but just to have it happen. And it was great, because it was a journey, right? It didn't happen overnight. It was a lot of hard work, but it's life altering. You know, be able to do that. You can do so many different things, and the peace of mind it provides you, you know, what you can help provide for your family. And you can go into more other ventures that you wasn't possibly before. And the other thing, didn't have to pay taxes on that. That was huge. And I was able to lock it in at a low rate, so I can do other things. I can buy more multis and just keep that, you know, wheel turning.
How much did you refi out of those deals?
So we did, it was 1.8 million. And then we could have took 2.8 million, but we took 1.8. And then we had a million credit line. Looking back where the rates are now, probably should have took it all. But
yeah. You just never know, but you played it safe. You finance right, because you have a lower loan to value, less risk. So 1.8 million on average, how much money did you make on average per flip?
I would say about 40.
40. How many flips did you need to do in order to make, let's call it an even $2 million? That's you're talking about net profit, because $2 million, you're not paying taxes, you're keeping that. So you'd probably have to flip $3 million with the profits. So if you do 3 million divided by 40, how many flips is that? Them's lots of flips. And the crazy part is they are all gone. Those flips are gone. It's just transactional. Meanwhile, these properties that you have, you're appreciating the property, continuing. Principal is getting paid down. You're getting cash flow. You continue to have cost segregation and depreciation on these assets. It's mind-blowing what a lot of hard work will end, ultimately lead up to. And you don't need 10 or 15 or 20 years. This thing can all happen in the matter of a few years if you surround yourself with the right mindset and the right people that are actually – What's the word that I want to say? I mean, they're actually executing on these strategies. These strategies aren't any, they've been out there forever. It's just sometimes it may be easier to find a property, cash in the $40,000. It feels really good, because it feels as if you're doing something. But all you did in this other strategy where you pulled out $1.8 million is you sat on these properties. You let them do the work themselves. There's something that really stuck with me, Jermaine. Maybe you can speak to this. You have to ask yourself, are you working hard for your money, which you and I were doing? I'm the restaurant, you're flipping homes, or is your money working hard for you? Well, you just proved in the second scenario, your money is working really hard for you. And then the same with me in my multifamily journey. If you can answer that question that your money's working hard for you, that's how you end up ultimately building that wealth. I'm excited because that really is life altering. I mean, to be able to pull out $1.8 million, and I love the fact that you weren't greedy. You didn't pull the whole thing out. You're actually going to continue to cash flow on this portfolio. Conversation with the wife. What did the wife say?
Yeah, when she saw her, it didn't really change our mindset. We're just, I kept looking, how can I take that money, like you said, and make money soldiers and keep working for us in the future? In the past, I've dealt with some health conditions. So the fix and flip, like I said, it's nice. But if something was to happen, I was to get sick again, how would I be taken care of? How would my wife, how would my children, my parents be taken care of for the next, 10, 20 years? If I can't work anymore, if you take me out of the equation, can they be provided for? Mm-hmm. So that was huge for me. Like in 2016, I was sick. I had a stent put in one of my main arteries in my leg. So I didn't know how long I was going to be down. So I guess that for me, what money provides is peace of mind. So if I was to get sick tomorrow and I had to stop doing my day-to-day things, we would be provided for. And that's at the end of the day, that's what money means to me.
Thank you for sharing that, because that will bring up another point for me. For anybody listening right now, answer that question for yourself. What is money going to do for you? Because money is not something you're here to accumulate with. Money provided germane security. For me, money provided my lifestyle autonomy to be able to start Jake and Gino. Because if I wasn't financially free, I couldn't be here hosting 2 or 3 podcast shows a week. I'd actually have to be out there, working on a different job or doing something different. So the autonomy that gave it to me, the security that it gave to you, and also the wealth building that it's given to you, really, really, really important. Let me ask you, in 2021, you joined Jake and Gino. What is the difference? What changes after you join Jake and Gino?
Look at a lot of things, scaling, definitely the education, being able to look at deals, the numbers, analyze it, look at the financing and what I'm going to do with the deal. Am I going to hold on to it for 5-10 years? I really like a lot of the things where you were holding on to the properties for the long term. That really resonated with me. Me and my partner were joint ventures. We've been that way, and that's how we want to continue to grow. We wanted to scale. I definitely would recommend, at a certain point, scaling. We kind of did what was given to us, what the defense gave to us. They gave us something, we took what they gave to us. We didn't really stretch or push it, but I think scaling is definitely important. The community, just being able to talk with other people, I can put something, on the Facebook page and I get tons of good feedback, really great people doing great things, whether it's, I've caught up with guys about, one big thing is for me is running. I can talk to them about that. A lot of good things with a lot of same things, and that's important to us. And it's a great community. I really enjoy it. I've really switched from that fix and flip mindset to long-term. Long-term wealth, long-term providing for my family when I'm gone. So.
And let me ask you, when you got into 2021, were you still doing a lot of deals? Because we just talked on the camera, off camera also. But let me ask you this also, doing small deals, we were just talking about it. What's wrong with doing small deals? Everyone is always being brainwashed nowadays by the gurus, go big or go home. You've got 137 units and you've added several deals. We're going to talk about them in a second, but talk about these small deals, how they've been life-changing to you and how you just continue to add on by buying right, financing right, and managing right.
Yeah. Again, given what was given to us, what the defense gave us in Massachusetts, we don't have a large buildings. Most of them are 3-deckers. If you talk to anybody from Massachusetts, they know the 3-deckers. That's what we have. So that's what we did. We took action. Some of it, we were looking at places outside of our own market, but it seemed easier for us to just get into our market and take one day at a time and just take action. And that's what we did. It wasn't easy. For every great story, I could give you a story that, how I learned so much, but it worked. It was taking action. That's what was available. And we did. These 3 families, you buy a 3-family at a good time, at a good price, you refinance I mean, it raises from, you know, 100,000 per unit. So just look at that. Yeah, I mean, that's a good amount of money in a little short time. So it's a 3-unit or a 6-unit. It can push off a lot of cash flow. Cash rents have went through the roof where they were to where they are now. And just that's where I look at it, you know, profit per unit. And you can do really well with it.
You're preaching the choir. PPU. No one talks about PPU. Jake and Gino are the only ones online anywhere talking about profit per unit because it's cash money. It's real. It's something that you're going to actually feed your family with. And you said the last couple of years, deals have not been as forthcoming. You haven't been able to do as many deals, but what you have been able to do is you have been able to work on your systems. You've been able to actually, you know, invest in the deals that you have right now. You've been able to refi all this money. What happened the last couple of months that the deal started coming back?
I think sellers that need to sell, they weren't having all the buyers come along, so they're more willing to work with price. That makes it sense for us to buy and finance it at the right price where we can get that profit per unit and we can add to our portfolio. And it just made sense for us. If maybe a year or two didn't make sense for us, so we didn't move that way. We didn't push it. But, you know, I mean, we're doing it. We bought a 7-unit. We bought a 3-unit of an owner that owned it forever. Definitely a mom and pop. We bought that from. We're holding those two. And then we bought another 6-unit from a mom and pop. We're definitely doing some renovations, improving it, leasing it out, you know, doubling the rents, maybe even more. And we're refinancing it out. And it's going to be great to our portfolio. And it just, the years that we weren't buying, we worked on systems, like you said. Because, you know, we have our own in-house property management. We have some good guys on our team that really do a great job. My property manager, he's on the team. He does a great job. So it allows me to do some other things, and I don't have to be in it every day. I don't have to be. I got to say, most of the tenants I haven't met personally. I met some of them. But when I first started, I was the property manager. I was doing everything. But now, you know, we built those systems, and it's great. And I want more. I want to keep going.
Jermaine, how did you say to yourself in the last 18 months, I got to pass on this deal? Everyone's doing deals around me. I'm getting deal junkie. I wanted to, because I had that feeling. I'm doing something wrong here. Everyone's closing deals, and I'm not closing deals. What held you off? What made you not buy deals during this last, I guess, 12 to 18 months?
It definitely, you know, I mean, got in my head at times, like, yeah, I mean, being, I see everybody buying units, and I just kept telling myself, I got to look at the numbers, what works for us, what our expenses are. And we knew that from the experience in the market. So we stuck to that. We stuck true to that. And again, you know, what was given, what the market gave us, we took, and we just focused more on different things during that time. Like I said, tightening our market, tightening our property management, our systems, and that's kind of, and now we're ready to go, and we keep adding more.
You talk about the buy. You keep on, and I want everyone to understand what Jermaine says when he's talking about the buy. He has a specific buy right criteria. He mentioned mom and pops, number one. Number two, he mentioned his Massachusetts market. Number three, he mentioned 3 to 10 units. So he's focusing, he's laser focused on these deals. When these deals come, he can actually pounce on them and not waste any time because he knows that's a good deal. Let's say, for instance, 80 a door, 700 rents, going to 1400. You need to understand how much of an expert you need to be in the market. Did you get any seller financing, by the way? I mean, have you had any in your market?
We haven't had any yet. In the past, we have. Like, I think during the 2014-15, we did have some of that, and it helped us continue to grow pretty quick, and we're not against it. We're definitely open to it.
It's coming back, my friend. We got one in our first deal in January. It's coming back, and I think some markets that are a little bit hotter than others, they're starting to cool down. Rents are starting to not escalate as much, and certain markets are actually taking a pause, which is, I think, a healthy thing. It's a good thing. We need to get inflation under control. When you're out there and you hear people talk about, I'd like to get into real estate. What would you say to them about getting into real estate? What are the first few things that they should do if they're serious about creating wealth and getting into real estate?
I think first thing, you need to educate yourself. I would recommend getting involved. And obviously I'm biased, like a Jake and Gino, where you can learn and you can ask questions, whether it's Jake or Gino, or just, you know, the community, I think is huge. That is important. You need to do that. And then you have to take action. You can't be like, is this the greatest deal ever? Like you said, a deal you buy now and then you're like, all right, I overpaid a little. But in 5, 10, 15 years, you're going to have so much equity in that, so much experience. You're not even going to think about it. You're not going to be like, oh, really? I wish I passed on that deal. You're going to be like, oh, I'm just glad I took action and took the step. And I guess, like you said, don't be, if 50 units intimidate you, go for a 5-unit. You know what I mean? Just take action. They all make money. You know, you just have that buy right criteria and keep going. You know what I mean?
I love what you said also before we were talking about these smaller deals. Get them on what we call our that imaginary conveyor belt. Because in 2 or 3 years, if you don't want that 3-unit, you want to go buy a 50-unit, great. You 1031 some of your assets into these other deals. Give yourself that opportunity, that option. You have to buy the asset right and you have to be able to manage it right. But if you're buying something today and you're buying it with the right fundamentals, then I will almost – I don't hate using the word guarantee, but I look back at it 5 years from now and go, I wish I had bought that deal in a good market with a good median income, with a good build and having all of the metrics that I'm looking for. But if I'm able to execute long term, we like to say buy right and sit tight for a reason. And one thing that I like that you said also is your exit strategy. You really learn the exit strategy because not every asset you're going to buy and hold forever. There are some that you like, you fix them up and I've just doubled the value on this. And I don't know, I'm not making enough cash flow on this property. Maybe I'll just sell the deal. So being open to your exit strategy is really, really important. Jermaine, you have a partner. Is there any tips that you can give about finding a partner or partnering up with somebody? Because I think when you're on your own, you know how life can be. It can be boring. It can be lonely. You can have a partner. If you don't have a partner, you may be making some bad unilateral decisions because you don't have somebody else's ideas or thoughts on it. What are the qualities that you should look for in a partner? And how did you find your partner?
So my partner, I was right out of college. Didn't have it much financing. So Steve, he was actually a family member. He was an uncle through marriage and he had a little more financially. He was doing it in a better position. We pretty much were kind of opposites. I was like, let's go, let's go, let's go. He was like, all right, we got to put the brakes on. Listen, like we got to make sure we have enough funds to keep doing this deal. Cause I'd be like, all right, put this on agreement. He's like, whoa, whoa, where's the down payments coming from? So it kind of, we managed each other and worked together, evolved over the years. I guess someone that is honest will call you on your stuff when, you know what I mean, you're kind of getting out of line and they can see it. But that is important. Someone that motivates you, that passion that you don't want to let them down. You almost find yourself working harder because you know they're working harder. You know, I mean, I think working off each other is huge just in sports. I mean, if you're working out and with a teammate and you see they're doing it, it just pushes you want to do more.
Mm-hmm. I love that. What is the future hold in store for Jermaine? Where does Jermaine want to go with his multifamily investing journey?
Keep adding units. I would like to get to 500 to 800. At one time it was 1,000, but what the market gives me, I will take. I won't be too eager to do something, but that is what we're going to continue to do. It just add in as many units as we can, and then I'd like to give it to my children someday. And that's what I really love it. And I recently, the last few years, as you mentioned, I saw all the benefit of it. It took some years, but it saw it, and it's like, wow, why wouldn't I not continue to do this? It just makes sense.
Jermaine, you remind me of a podcast that we did, and Jake and I reference this book often. It's called Small Giants by Bo Burlingham. So anybody listen to this, go to the Jake and Gino channel and listen to that podcast. We did two. We did one with a gentleman named Paul Spiegelman. He actually controls the Small Giants community, and Bo Burlingham wrote the book. And it's a lot of our companies like yourself, like me and Jake, we don't own 20 or 30,000 units. We don't want to be the next Facebook. And we don't have to be. If you want to do that, that's fine. But I think the first thing is to understand yourself personally, understand your investor goals, understand your goals as well as your investor goals, and understand yourself, because Jermaine out there may want to have 500 units that are doing $300 profit per unit. That tends to be a lot of money. And it's not just doing it for the money. That provides his security and that provides his comfort level. And he wants to stay within the market. Jake and myself, same thing. We have I think 1700 units right now, more or less that. We could have syndicated and scaled up and had 5,000 units. That wasn't what we wanted to do. We wanted to have portfolio that we can control and grow, not outgrow our infrastructure. So it's really important as you're listening to this, what are your goals? You can have either or, but just being clear and having the clarity, selecting the market, and then taking that final step before you start investing to say, this is what I want to do. Because that clarity will set you free once you understand what you can focus on. Jermaine, where can the listeners get a hold of you if they want to learn more about you?
Yeah, so my phone number, pretty easy, is 774-930-5694. Or email jermaineahurley@gmail.com. And I'm on Facebook, Instagram, so pretty easy to contact. But yeah, reach out. I always love talking real estate. So that's pretty, that and sports. So either one, I'm always game for a conversation.
I want to really recap Jermaine's story because I find it to be so fascinating. It's very similar to Jake's. In 2008, Jermaine is working out, man. He's like, this is great. I'm going to get my physical training. I'm going to get into the gym. I'm going to help all these people. These people are all going to become amazing. They're all going to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And when he gets there, he's like, dude, come on. I told you to do the workout. Why aren't you doing the workout? I got to find another gig. This gig is not working for me. So what does he do? He picks up the book. He starts reading it. The light bulb goes off. He goes, real estate. The only problem is it's 2008, probably one of the worst times in the history of this country to start real estate. But that doesn't stop him because he's got a big why and he doesn't know what he doesn't know. So he jumps in, gets his realtor's license. He buys his first deal. And by 2014, he's already flipping homes. And he's saying to himself, you know what? This is a tough market to flip homes, but I'm making some money here. And hopefully, as that journey went on, he looks back and he says, I wish I had held on to a few more of these. But that's okay because I've got 136 units. I'm crushing it. I've pulled out $2 million in a cash out refi. I'm redeploying that money. I'm working on the conveyor belt. I've got my buy right, finance right, manage right going. And I love what I'm doing. And it's providing me the security and the comfort. Oh, and oh, by the way, my net worth continues to grow. My wealth continues to grow just by buying the assets properly, utilizing my baby money soldiers the proper way to create wealth and to continue to reinvest in the business. That's what he ended up doing. He didn't go out and buy the Lambos, but he kept putting that money back into the business and back into redeploying his baby money soldiers so they could procreate and they can go out and buy more deals. Any final words, Jermaine?
No, definitely get started. Reach out. Again, I'm biased. I think Jake and Gino is a great community, very down to earth and just honest and give you what you need to hear. It's not always what you want to hear, but it's what you need to hear. So I appreciate you guys and I thank you for everything.
Jermaine, I want to thank you for being an amazing guest, a fantastic guest on the show and sharing your Movers and Shakers story. If you want to be the next Movers and Shakers, email Mackenzie@jakeandgino.com. Please leave us a review. And until next time, let's go out and let's make it a Movers and Shakers day. Thanks, Jermaine.